Hello and welcome to our next episode of the AI Boardroom. Today we have a pretty interesting topic which got a lot of buzz this week. Svetlana, tell our audience what this is all about.
Yeah, so today we'll be talking about automated agents. We'll be covering what they actually are, the types. So there are different types of agents and what they mean for you. How to actually implement them, and then what does it mean for your business? And I think what Edgar was kind of alluding to as far as like being the buzz of the week is because of Google Next. And that was a hot topic that was discussed. I happened to be able to join kind of the conference and observe all the events, talk to lots of vendors, go to sessions and kind of learn. But it was a very strong theme, I think, at the conference for sure. Yeah. So agents, I think in general, people are looking to automate their workflows. They're looking to implement AI, not just in sales, marketing, and I want to say customer service agents. But we are seeing kind of a lot of promise of using agents across different workflows. And I think before we even joined the podcast, you know, Edgar and I were talking about even for coding or automating workflows as it relates to your day-to-day work. You don't have to, again, use it for business necessarily, but how do you even implement these agents in your day-to-day? I mean, it is possible. So, and I think, again, automation and efficiencies are something that can impact your day-to-day work, but then you can also introduce them into your personal life. So we'll focus on the business side, but just wanted to mention that it's definitely something that's being talked about more this week, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I was kind of curious. Yeah, I was also writing to you how it was in Vegas. I think you still haven't told me like the evening stories. So we have to get to this after the podcast.
I did not gamble, so if that's what you're ordering, you I don't
no,
gamble.
No, that's the version for your employer. Yeah.
Save it.
And I was kind of curious because I've read like a lot of headlines on YouTube and like agents were like the like Google is all in agents and foreign agents and stuff like that. And then after watching the actual keynote, and also I watched also the developer keynote, I was kind of maybe
almost what sold is on it.
Yeah, and it directly came to me like, what is an agent? And it was kind of also the idea of today's episode to dive more into, yeah, what are agents in the AI world? And also, what did Google mean? And how did we solve stuff earlier and before? So yeah, we have a bit of a roundup and deep dive today on what this actually means. So yeah. I think, Svetlana, you brought it up. So like we have, you said that we have had already and still have today rule-based agents. And we now get into a realm where it kind of slowly moves into not only rule-based but also intelligence and intelligent agents. Would you love to elaborate on that?
Yeah, and so I think a lot of people when we talk about a lot of buzz that I would say you would hear outside of these conferences is, you know, maybe LinkedIn. This is where I hang out quite a lot. Is automating workflows with Zapier, and so I just want you to kind of differentiate that with intelligent agent because Zapier is a rule-based engine. So, and the way that you kind of define and differentiate between intelligence and rule-based, if you have to explicitly spell out, like, when you experience this, then you do this, you basically are spelling out tasks and rules for it to follow. And it's limited to the integrations that it has. So Zapier is really not that intelligent. But a lot of, I think, again, sales automation agents, or I'm sorry, the automated agent experts in AI are selling you this as kind of automations that are intelligent. And I've seen that quite a lot. Just want you to kind of emphasize that those Zapier and those types of tools that are just automating when you have to spell out explicit rules it's not intelligence.
So, yeah, and also, like, you have to, every branch has to be described as its own way to go. Exactly. Whereas if you have true intelligence, what does it actually mean? Like, we have, and that's basically also, like, if you look at today's chatbots, they look not that different, but they are a lot more flexible. And that's because they are not pre-programmed to specific answers, but they are programmed to a specific course. And following that course, they do what they have to and what they are able to with the toolbox they have been given. So that's basically, like, that's another paradigm. And that's the same for automation. So we had Zapier, you also have on the Microsoft side Power Automate. I think make.com is also something that came up the last year. Mm-hmm. So these are all like automation workflow tools. Like, we had workflow tools basically for my whole career. I started in IT in 2010 and a bit earlier, like in school and stuff like that. Like, through all that time, we had workflows and automations. And what you mentioned, the AI consultants that are running out there and AI automation agencies, I think they're called.
I'll just kind of emphasize, maybe before you go on, and the reason why they're calling them AI is because you can actually integrate Zapier with AI tools, but that doesn't make them intelligent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I stole your thunder. I'm sorry.
but Lana said, we have now the option to take these workflows and automate parts of it. One example would be, I made a chatbot for what was it like? I think it was a website which needed to onboard marketing customers. And through that onboarding, I had unstructured data in the form of, they just typed in their CI and their basic, like, company stuff, uploaded their logo, that stuff. So we had still a path to go, but instead of doing, like, every path all the time and or every branch, I was able to integrate AI and significantly that's the word today.
reduce
the amount of workflow parts I needed, because I could do it partly in a loop. So I replaced all the branches that were pre-programmed with one AI loop. So there is intelligence in there, but it's not like the AI itself deciding where to go and what to do, and maybe come up with new ways, which would be actually intelligent.
And I like that definition. I think hopefully for the audience, it's easier to, like, also decipher when you kind of break down. I think AI in general is better understood when you break these, distill it down to the essence. So if you explicitly have to program rules and define workflows, very likely that you're dealing with rule-based automation. If there are things that you can rely on, these services or tools, that you don't have to explicitly spell out every possible scenario, I think, as Edgar was mentioning, that is AI-enabled automation, basically, or an AI, truly artificial intelligent automation tools. And I think the other beauty behind it is that they learn based on the paths and based on the workflows that you actually execute, and then they become better over time. And I think that's the intelligent piece, is that there's some machine learning, some enhancements, and some learning mechanisms that are embedded in that process. So you don't have to explicitly spell out every possible scenario, and that's where the automation piece comes in.
Right. For example, I built one solution where the AI gets, like, a complete document and makes a step-by-step tutorial from that document, and there are no pre-programmed steps whatsoever. It just decides what to give out, if anything, and also decides, okay, I haven't found anything useful for you. We have to solve it another way. So, and that's where, and even that could debate if it's really intelligent. But yeah, it doesn't need tutorials. It just needs a document describing the process, and it makes a tutorial from it automatically. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of. But we could maybe take it later on the episode then, where I can explain how you get this process intelligent, because I thought already about that. Let's first of all talk again about Google. Google was in the next keynote. And as far as I understood, they basically call everything an agent because they have customer support agents, which are basic chatbots with a knowledge base. Like it's usually not called agent; it's a RAG pipeline, and you have a chatbot with retrieval augmented generation, which is fine because the whole grounding is also a word which more and more gets into all the AI AI stuff. Grounding is pretty useful because it just grounds everything the chatbot says on actual documents. But it's not an agent, at least not how I understand it.
Yeah, and grounding, just for for the audience, I think, as you were kind of explaining it, so it avoids hallucinations. So if you're basically saying that, I think it's pretty big for businesses, actually. So if hallucination is a big risk for your organization, we've seen that where you have airlines and, let's say, automotive agents being, not agents, but chatbots, being customer facing, and they just make up stuff. You want to make sure you limit their responses to whatever is available in your documents. And so if it doesn't exist in the documents, they basically say, hey, I don't have that knowledge, I can't respond. So I think that's
exactly
that's what I think Edgar means. But I think it's a huge consideration. I heard a lot of that, especially if you're in the banking industry or any of the highly regulated industries. That's really huge. So yeah. And there was a lot of emphasis at the conference on that too.
Yeah, definitely. So, and that's where kind of like the agent wording fell apart a bit on the whole event, because they used basically everything that integrates Gemini was an agent. So, no. But if that's not an agent, what is? And they had another really interesting example, which I found, which was a shopping assistant. Mm-hmm. And that was more of an agent to me than like just a normal chatbot, because I think they even showed it. They made a call to the call center, which also was an AI agent. And it updated her chat during the call. Which was, I think it wasn't the dev in a developer keynote. I found it fascinating because she was like, she uploaded a video and said, I want the same shirt as the lead singer has. And then it searched the shirt, which was looking like this. And then she called to order and it updated the stuff in the actual chat, which I found like this was not only multimodal, it was also multi-channel. It's like, and that's more of an agent from my point of view, because there you have stuff like happening in the background, stuff is creating, stuff is searched, and it's more of a system of AI like tasks working together, basically. And I think that I thought, that's also something I have to give Google props for. They had this shop, which was like the overarching theme or example they went through, and they had pretty good examples, I find, to how a business would use that.
And something maybe for people to test out, because I did talk to someone on that particular topic too, although I didn't see the developer keynote. If you wanted to experience what Edgar is talking about as far as like being able to shop for specific items, go on Pinterest. I recently explored that. Pinterest has that option. So if you, let's say, you probably can't upload the image, but if you're browsing something, I thought it was pretty cool, and you're browsing an image, and you know, sometimes it's not really, that image is not linked to a shopping page. Sometimes it's just an image that's associated, like a stock image with an article, but you're like, that's a really cool shirt. And if you can actually, double tap it, and it'll locate an item that looks like that for you.
Yeah,
to shop.
So it's nothing new in general. Like Google had the stuff with also implemented, but now having, that was not even their example from the shop, the demo that they had. That was an actual customer of Google, and they had their pictures indexed in a vector database. And that was what I found interesting, because I never thought about it, but it makes total sense if we have multimodal models to also vectorize pictures and then like find the nearest neighbor, basically. So that was kind of cool. I like that a lot. But still not an agent for me.
Oh, it's not, so what do you mean?
Yeah. So like for me, AI agents, this is basically where the whole industry is heading into like in that direction. And it's a topic which I follow like for a year. Like the first thing I wanted to build was actually an agent in AI, but I was limited by the technology of my time, basically, to quote Iron Man. What I think an agent has to be is something that works at least partly autonomous.
Of course.
And there is a bit of autonomy in the search itself when you talk about the shopping example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's still the passive system. I still have to say, hey, I have this request. Please make something that solves this request.
Yes.
What I understand from an agent is I have this goal.
Yeah.
Please reach this goal and do everything you need on the way. So it basically doesn't start with a problem, but it starts with a goal, and all the issues along the way which arise to reach that goal, it creates tasks for itself and solves them. And that's actually an agent for me.
Yes, and I totally agree. So it would be multi-step. You define the goal. And then, so for example, in the shopping example, it's actually, I want to buy the shirt. So the agent would be able to find, based on the picture, whatever the prompt is, being able to figure out which API to use to which store that is likely, and then put that shirt into your cart and potentially take you to the basically checkout page. So all you have to do is just agree to pay for it. So it resolved the issue of finding or browsing websites, finding the store, finding all of these things. So you don't have to check with a human along the way. It basically takes you from what you want from a problem to a solution, and in however many steps it requires, and it just kind of figures out the rest.
Yeah. And you can even bring it one step further if you have some cues or trigger which actually... like that the agent is able to like every day look at your emails and do the work, you know, like the goal is to keep your inbox clean, and then the agent goes ahead and does everything he needs to. And I'm personally a big fan of partly autonomous agents which have some boundaries where they need human intervention to keep going or to fulfill a task. For example, if you have a social media agent which every day scours your internal company documents and looks for interesting stuff that happened and creates a post, for example. Mm-hmm. Let's just imagine it takes into consideration contents of meetings. You might want to look over the post before it's posted. So the last task, which is basically post on LinkedIn or something, there would be a task where the boundary says only with human intervention. And it creates a task where the human has to confirm for it to keep going, which doesn't mean it cannot work on other posts. But this one specific post is in the line for being confirmed to then go on. I think you have the same thing in the ERP systems where people change customer data, for example. And if it's finance data, then finance has to approve the change. So stuff like that, it's like common also for like natural intelligence. So why shouldn't it be for AI?
So going back to the social, I think, example, because I see a lot, and maybe this is going to be a hot topic for people that people are curious about. So we do see a lot of agents being used on commenting. And I think, you know, a lot of times people are looking to grow on LinkedIn and they try to make themselves visible on people's posts. And so, and clearly some of these comments are automated. Like I'm sure that there's no human in the loop involved, because there's one post that was pretty funny that happened. You know, someone, you know, I collaborated with someone and I think the whole post was, you know, my collaborator basically kind of sharing his experience and how thankful he was for the collaboration. And then I think whoever posted the comment was like, oh, I too am so glad that you, Svetlana, have been had a chance to like collaborate with me. So clearly I got the context wrong. And okay, it was like completely...
That's cool. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
So he didn't understand the context of like what was basically said or whatever. Yep. But then there's also, again, like a lot of discussions that are happening that people are just kind of, again, like there's like clear tell signs that this is automated like generation. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe say a little bit more as to like how some of these agents actually work? Because again, we see them a lot on across social media platforms. So mm-hmm. how does it actually work?
So for me, it's all about task planning and execution. So like one thing when talking about LLMs oftentimes arises is that the systems themselves are not able to plan. That does not mean generally planning is out of the window. It means just in a request, it's not planning ahead. So it just generates the next token. But what it can do, and that's how you basically would start implementing it, is first is how to implement a system to tell the AI how to fill a task list and where to get the tasks from. Because like I always say, LLMs are text in, text out. And everything has to be solved by a language. And you want basically go from unstructured, your goal, to structure your task list. Mm-hmm. And that's how you would start. So you will go ahead, and the first thing you have to solve is make one AI persona, or usually there are several AI mm-hmm. personas working on the request to plan out all the steps to get to the goal. And then it goes ahead, and like basically with classical programming, you take one step after another, or maybe even you could do it with function calling and the AI gets the next task itself. But one way or another, you get one task, you execute on the task, you finish the task, and then you go to the next task. And that's basically the most like basic implementation of that. So if the context is write me LinkedIn comments, then one task would be, okay, get the current LinkedIn feed. Second task would be identify posts which are interesting and like worth commenting on. Third, generate the comments. Fourth, ask the human if the comments are fine. And then fifth would be post the comments. And that's basically you use the AI as a brain for planning out and doing all the text work, the language work, basically. And then you go ahead and do basically classical programming to execute on that. And you also can do prepare tools and tell the AI, hey, this is the tool you have. You can execute on it. But this basically you have to combine the thinking, LLM, with the execution, which is like normal programming. That's like the basic concept of how you would do it.
And I think you have to also focus on the task. So again, I'll say this because I think I just see a lot of buzz also or kind of talk on this on social media platforms. I think using chatbots on social platforms is cheating. You know, you're taking claim for or leaving comments as if it's your presence and yeah. making people feel like you were there to actually look at those comments and, you know, really think of an output to relationship build, but then there's really none of you there. And people, again, like follow you and subscribe to you. And this is why you kind of see these big followings, but then people don't really communicate with them or like don't relationship build with these individuals because clearly they're chatbots. So I feel like, again, there's use cases where chatbots should be included, but I don't think chatbots on social media is one. It's cheating.
I'm always a bit. For example, a lot of times in my career, I had people helping me with social media. And because I was doing a lot of other stuff and I was just not putting in the work for, or wasn't able most of the time to put in the work, create the post, craft it, to go in Canva, create the visuals for that. I never did outsourced commenting. That's on that I'm kind of with you. You, mm-hmm. you either like want to say something or you don't, but let AI comment in on your behalf. That has also been done by employees of influencers and companies and stuff. So it's nothing new. So is there actually a difference for it to be done by AI?
I think so. I mean, even as you mentioned, I think that there's two schools of thoughts, maybe. One is you leave a comment because you truly are kind of reflecting on someone's post, like someone invested the time. Like, but why would even your employee comment on something that, you know, someone else has written, right? So like, what's kind of the point? Like the only purpose, again, between using these automated agents, basically, that are running through social media platforms is to gain visibility. And so because you're and to grow following, which, again, I think it's, again, a cheating way to do that, because there's really no authenticity behind it. And so, and this is why I think I actually value, even if you have a huge following, and we know that, you know, some of the bigger influencers, I think, in the industry, like, they don't have the time to comment. So guess what? They don't release chatbots or, you know, their employees to like comment on people's stuff. Sometimes they'll leave like a few comments, but I do think that authenticity is really huge if you want to really stick to it. So again, there's use cases. And the reason why I'm saying this is like, there's use cases where you should consider, like, is this something that I should be using AI for? And this goes back to ethics. But there are use cases where, I mean, it's game changing, right? So things that are truly helping you build efficiencies into your workflows. But again, when there is those questions, like, should I be doing it? Like, ask a friend for an opinion sometimes. get a second opinion. Is all I'm basically hoping to inspire.
Yeah, and one thing to always keep in mind, like, you always are in danger of it posting like stuff you didn't want to post. I back in the day, to be honest, I used Lampod, which is where it's basically you are in the community, and Lampod automates the interaction between the community members.
And I've never heard of it.
You get likes, and if you want, you even get comments, and you can even pre-write the comments for your posts. So, and you can comment on other people's posts automatically. The thing is, if you, I deactivated it after one day, I guess, or some, if you comment on other people's posts and it's a post about like right-wing politics or something, you might not want to have your name under that. Yeah. It's like, awesome.
<That's>, thumbs up. Great ideas.
So that's definitely something to keep in mind or to have an eye on, is what are you actually
commenting yourself in trouble.
Because like, we know how social media works. Like, you don't look properly, and you're so quickly switching into like social media bubbles, which you didn't want to get in. I think there is a lot of risk involved too. The same, you wouldn't do like completely automated sales emails without actually looking over it. So, or at least you shouldn't. I think it's like kind of the same.
Sometimes it's done. And this is what I'm saying again, like, before you automate these pipelines or these workflows, just kind of consider the impact that those automations will create. And is human in the loop, I think, a big portion of it. And I would say maybe marketing, sales, depending on the industry, but I would say, you know, some of these automations, like human in the loop, is like a must, especially in highly regulated industries. You would never want to release an automated like comment, nothing, I would say, like in healthcare and banking. There's a human always involved, so make sure you consider that. So don't release anything that's truly automated end to end without having kind of human in the loop approve at least that workflow.
Yeah. There is also where, like, we will come shortly to the challenges. There is also another thing you have to keep in mind for that. But before we get to that, I would love to just mention some of the frameworks. So Google now released Vertex AI Agent Builder on their cloud platform. As far as I understood, and I didn't try it out, so it's like with a grain of salt, it's more in the realm of GPTs from OpenAI, which also has to be mentioned here. This is not an active system. It's still more of a like prompt builder kind of thing where you are able to augment your context with actions, with third-party sources, or with documents in form of REG pipeline. So it's not as sophisticated. It's even not as sophisticated as some of the demos they showed. You cannot build that with the Vertex AI Agent Builder, which is kind of sad because it would have been possible to put a bit more capability into that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there's open source as always, and there are two projects which I really, really want to put a bit of an emphasis on. It's one is Autogen, which is a Microsoft framework, which lets you build AI agents. And one of the main things to be considered there is like you have different roles and different personas working together, and that's. Actually what the framework enables you to easily or like more easily manage it, to not be at the position to program everything yourself. And there is another completely open source, I think at least, there is no big company behind that, or at least not released it, because Autogen is basically released by Microsoft. And it's called Crew AI. And I think Crew AI even has a like Pokemon-like UI where you see the people like working together and stuff like that. So
did you say Pokemon?
Yeah, Pokemon. Yeah.
if you like that, that may be a motivating factor for you to try it out.
Yeah, I think if I'm not completely mistaken, but I think Crew AI was the one agent platform which has also might also be something else. I might be mistaken on that one. I'm sorry, but Crew AI is basically the latest and most interesting open source project I've seen. And it's, if I see modern agent videos, a lot of the times they use Crew AI because it's just working well.
And I think we talked about GPTs also as. some sort of, I guess, belonging to the intelligent agent space. So how so? Because I thought it was, a lot of the capabilities of GPTs right now are basically glorified prompt.
If we mention Vertex AI Agent Builder, it's just kind of like, to be complete, we have to know GPTs. From our definition, it's not an agent. But they sell it like it, and people will read agent in the context of that. So yeah, take it as you wish. I will not say force anyone to use agents like we use it, but if you talk about AI agents, from my point of view and my own opinion, you have to have at least partly autonomous systems.
Yeah. Again, I guess the playing the devil's advocate, you could potentially, so if your workflow involves just creating content, right? So you could potentially automate a big portion of your workflow of creating content, if that's literally all you're kind of doing, which will probably involve research, crafting an outline, and then generating. So like there are a few steps in between for you to get from a blank sheet to a polished article, right? So you could, again, depending on what your workflow is, but it's not going to be able to like automate a conversation. You know, the GPT having a conversation with like a client. So there's certain tasks that I think it could be and it's not even trained, but like prompted or, you know, system prompted in order to kind of fulfill as far as like multiple steps. But still, I think you are kind of providing it context. You're explicitly telling it what to do and how to potentially achieve that task. So again, depending on how you look at it, you could argue that there is some intelligence that it's automate. Some of the steps are automated, but still it's not truly hands off.
Yeah. And you have to activate it. And it's where like I would love to have like its last topic, like what does it mean for you and your business? So like we've said it at some point already, but we have passive stuff, which is reacting to requests and try to solve the specific requests. And then you have active stuff, which kind of is meant as autonomous agents, which actively create their own tasks and solve them, or solve them one by one to reach a certain goal. And this means basically you can do more complex stuff. If you do it right, you can basically create virtual employees for that, and which are doing work and solving stuff for you. And yeah, I think I don't have to tell any business owner how huge such an opportunity might be. But there are also challenges involved in that. And yeah, would you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So I would say cost and the precision, right? So you want to make sure that if you're truly automating kind of workflows, that depending on the solutions or what AI tools that you've actually implemented, you can run into some big inference costs or just costs in general, because again, you've automated these workflows and you're kind of releasing them into the wild, especially if you don't have human in the loop. Some of the costs of these models, especially if you have generative AI plugged into those workflows, I think that's the biggest eye-opening kind of situation is Gen AI is quite expensive. So you think, the costs go up significantly depending on how many tasks you're actually running. So especially if you're doing that as part of your automation workflows, they can run up big. And so when you see your first bills, you want to make sure that whatever workflow you're automating, it's actually worth the investment into the AI. So the goal is for you to build efficiencies. And efficiencies, kind of the way they translate to business leaders, I think, is ROI. So what process are you actually trying to improve? And what's the cost of that process end to end? And then what would be kind of the projected cost for you to actually do this with agents? So you want to make sure that you didn't introduce a process that actually costs you more than to do it in kind of the old way. So there's an ROI ballpark calculation that you'll need to do to make sure that it's worth investing, not just for the sake of technology and saying, hey, I have AI automating my workflows. It actually has business sense for you to really implement. And I think you want to make sure that you also look at precision. And so, and I think, and maybe you'll kind of, I'd love to get your angle on this too, but humans are really good at adopting. And so one of the things that AI in general is looking to do is to kind of replace how we think. But it's not at the same level of competence as we are. So sometimes some of the processes that we run on a daily basis, yes, they're manual, but we are able to be flexible enough to accommodate new situations and things that we would call edge cases. We're just intelligent enough to be like, hey, this looks like, this process, let's do it. So the accuracy, and as you mentioned, like precision, sometimes with humans is higher than these machines because they're still learning. So again, depending on the maturity of your model and your process, you may experience some issues as kind of, these automated workflows encounters, especially like these edge cases that have not been exposed to in kind of their in previous. So yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, the precision part is actually the one which is really hurtful, because LLMs are not 100%. That's what we learned with all the usage of it over the time. If you think about a system which is not 100%, and at some points even like a bit lower, like 85%, 80%, 60%, who knows, on one task. And if you just add up enough tasks,
oh yeah,
and they are all a bit like, it's like building a tower, and every bit is a bit misplaced. And at some point, if the tower gets high enough, it just breaks.
Yeah.
And that's basically where we're at. We are like, this is something that will be solved with time. So if you now implement an agent, and it's maybe not as capable as you would love it to have it, because of that lack of precision, this will solve itself by time. We get newer models which will be more precise, which will do less mistakes and less hallucinations, and then we get to it. Another thing also connected to the complexity is context window, mm-hmm. which at least was an issue until this week or last week. Because now we get to the models with a million context window. I think context is not an issue anymore. But that's something to be at least aware of, that you have context that's building up, because like you create a task, the task had output, you have to consider the output for the next mm-hmm. task and to solve it and stuff like that. So splitting it up in separate tasks like reduces context sizes significantly. What is
significantly?
It today? Significantly. Yeah, I don't know. By a huge amount, and that's really weird. It reduces it by a huge amount, but you still, if the task is complex enough, for example, if you have like a lot of code which you want to execute, context might still be an issue, especially if you use like local models. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's that.
I'll kind of note that I'll emphasize that the error being compounded, but I think it's not a unique issue, which I'd love to talk about in maybe one of the future episodes too, is if you're orchestrating multiple AI systems together, you have to look at the error rates of each, not just task as in with automated agents, but those precision rates or like these error rates compound. And so you have to track kind of where and enhance each one of those steps. So there's monitoring and observability that you have to kind of implement to make sure that you have a good grasp as to what the heck's happening. And so that you have an understanding, okay, well, what part of the process can you really improve? So there are things, again, we're not still at the level of maturity that these automated agents are plug and play. So there are some, as you kind of build them, and I think this is where, Edgar, you have a lot of experience, there's some fine tuning that you have to do, or some additional kind of molding of the system that you have to do. So they're
maybe,
not completely
maybe,
out of
maybe
the
use
box.
Grounding, use fine tuning, stuff like that. Yeah. So do anything you can to avoid hallucinations, but it's the same for every AI implementation whatsoever. You have to keep the error rate down. And that's exactly. Like I always say, like usually you had in classic programming, you had input A and you had output B. Now you have input A and you have output A to C or A to D. And try to limit it to A to B, but you have to work with A to B. So, but it's fine. Like error correction was something that we had in IT forever. And now we have like just a different way of error correction. It's solvable. I think I'm still believe, and I'm a strong believer, and not everyone would agree with that, but I'm a strong believer that we are really close to real intelligence just by engineering it right. So I think it's not a matter, well, not completely the matter of only getting better system, but it's also a matter of engineering the right implementation. So that's why the correct integration of AI systems and knowing what's possible and knowing the ins and outs is really valuable. So before you start anything, try to get this right and try to anticipate what issues you could face and how to solve it. And most of them are solvable. So Yeah, that's just a hint that I can give.
Yeah. I think value packed, again, hopefully you found something out of this episode that you kind of stuck to you. And we'd love to, if there's anything that you want us to dive in a level deeper, or if you want to come as a guest with us, please join us. We always like to have different guests talking in different topics. And speaking of guests, we will have Mike joining us, and we'll talk more about his background, but on AI for recruiting next week. So really,
really
excited about that
episode.
I'm
looking forward to that one. Yeah. Because recruiting is a hard task, and having it automated with AI is a sweet dream.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we did meet with him. So I think, again, something to look forward to. He's developed some really cool tools in kind of his space that he's been able to implement to support his workflow. So speaking of agents, maybe if anyone's interested to understand how some of the tools that we've talked about could be implemented and talk about specific use cases, tune in onto next week's episode. But other than that, please don't forget to subscribe. We love your support. It's validating for us to hear that hey, we're on the right track and continue doing what we're doing. And we enjoy talking about this stuff. So thank you for taking the time and joining us this week.
Yeah. Also, thank you from my side. Thank you, Lana, again, for your wonderful co-hosting. And it's been 10 episodes now.
We should celebrate.
We had even an extra video. So talking about that, keep an eye on our YouTube channel. We started uploading news episodes for covering the news. You might notice that we didn't do that in the episode that was on purpose. Keep your eyes open. Follow us on YouTube, and then you might get the latest AI news in your beloved setting. And and we also do screen shares and show stuff there, so stuff we cannot do on the podcast. So please go to YouTube, subscribe, and leave a comment. It helps us.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see each other next week.
Bye-bye.